They're bad. They're boys. And occasionally, they talk about running. Yes, it's the Bad Boy Running Podcast with your hosts, Jody Rainsford and David Heller. Come back. Baby, come back.
With a bye, 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 bye. With a bye, 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 bye. I must admit I was a clone to be messing around. But that doesn't mean that you have to leave town. Come
back. Bye, 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 bye.
Bye, 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 bye. Hello, Jody Rainsford.
Hello, hello, Ali Bailey. How are you?
I'm just glorious this morning. How are you?
You look like you're in a very nice location. You've got one of those. You've got what you're sat on one of those chairs that you only find in B&Bs.
Yeah,
like those wooden chair type thing.
Four cushions underneath.
Yes, exactly.
I'm in Southies in a little Airbnb. I'm doing a little South Downs Way recce of like the last 50 miles with some clients. Not only are they my clients, they're also my friends now, I think. They're locked downstairs.
We're taking
quiet.
The thing is, you need to start up another mini cult. Like, if they like you, you need them to fear you.
Exactly. And that's somebody described me the other day as the nice Aunt Middleton. I loved it. SAS, do your best.
The non-twatty Aunt Middleton.
Yeah, the nice Aunt. He's like, you're just Aunt Middleton, but nice. And I'm like, this is a good thing. What was I going to say? Yeah, so we're doing this recce of the South Downs Way for the people that are doing the South Downs Way 100. I'm slightly worried. We're going from Boltofs to Eastbourne, and I'm slightly worried I might have some sort of post-traumatic stress disorder moment on it at some point. So it's better to do it with other people. To do it on my own.
What, as a result of ARC?
No, as a result of me running the South Downs Way 100 last year and having the most... It's on YouTube.
That was the South Downs Way 100, was it?
Okay, Lorna,
sorry.
That I've ever had.
Oh, yes. Do you know what? I've not listened to that, but I have heard... I've heard Lorna's version of it.
I haven't. Like, there's this thing, right? Like, there's this thing with I'm not in AA, but there's this thing with AA where you have to go back and like apologize to everyone that you've ever upset and like own the situation and talk it through. I can't do that with Lorna, so I'm just leaving it and hoping she forgets about it. I think she has. She was very nice to me on the ARC. Having said that, I'll talk about that when I talk about the ARC.
So she's
got PTSD from it.
So just in listening, in case you don't know what we're talking about, this is, you did this for the Running Channel, didn't you? It was basically warts and all follow you over 100 miles as you slowly suffer, I think.
Yeah, it was thoughts of an ultra runner, and I had to talk about what I was thinking every mile, which in itself was an endurance event, because I had to switch the GoPro on, put it on my face, be like, la, 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 switch it off again, and then... They kind of cut that in with footage that they got along the route. And by mile 75, I was quite bored of doing that.
I'm bored of this. I don't like this concept. I haven't liked this concept from about 25 miles ago. And I'm just not going to play your game anymore.
No, it's quite interesting. It's like watching the slow decline of man, of civilization.
When you do 100 mile, and I think this is different for different people, when you do 100 miler, do you always go through the same pattern?
I've noted a pattern. So I've had quite a seismic life shift in the last year, which is I stopped drinking alcohol, and I was an alcoholic, functioning one, but an alcoholic. So I've become quite clear, and I've looked at thought processes of things that I've done and patterns that I've made. And usually for 100 miler, it was... About mile 75, I would have sort of a mini meltdown, and then I'd come through it at about mile 85. So it's like 10 miles of horror. But I keep quiet about it. Usually, I'd keep quiet about it, and I wouldn't talk to my pacer about it. I'd just be like, I'm having a moment for 10 miles, which takes 3 hours, and it was all right. And then when I had my issues on the ARC, it was exactly the same point.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. And I'm like, this is a point. But like, I don't really remember having it on my first 100, but then Lee Stewart Evans was there. So I don't know what he put in my water.
He disrupts. That's the thing. I think you need to do 100 mile without LSE, because I think there is a disruptive element there to that process. Because I was thinking, I when I've done hundreds, it's been different each time. Like when I heard that you'd done this thing where you were basically, you know, tracking it over, like the first Thames Path 100 I'd have done, that would have been great. The second one that I did, that would have been horrific. Like, it would have been the two different stories.
Well, there's a thousand variables, isn't there? Like, weather is the biggest variable.
But no, but when I did them, they were both kind of the same. They were both kind of the same in terms of the... Or have I got that the wrong way around? I don't know. But one of them, it would have been awful, and the second one would have been fine. But yeah, there's one thing that I always do on a 100-miler, which as you're saying that, is that is only the only kind of pattern that I've noticed, is that from mile 40 to mile 50, I will repeatedly tell myself I'm going to quit halfway. And I will say to myself, I'm definitely finishing. I'm definitely
even
finishing at 50 miles.
Well, even if you feel all right?
Well, it's just mentally at that point. But then when I get to Reading, basically, or wherever the halfway point is, that completely goes out of my mind and I start again.
See, I'm fine to 50 because I'm like, in my head, I'm like, there's no, like, no pushing anything, no pushing any buttons till 50, because that's when the way I do it is mentally, my race, in inverted commas, starts at mile 50. How do you feel? Is everything okay? For me, it is 75, and I don't believe in walls, or I don't even believe in the concept of walls, but I think 75 is usually on a average 100, if there is such a thing, that's 4 o'clock in the morning to about 5 o'clock in the morning, you're really tired. You still got another 25 miles to go. But once I go over that, like 80 to 85 mile, I'm like, oh, you're just running home now. And so it's just getting through that bit. But South Downs Way was a mixture of really hot day, me having a severe mental health crisis. I shouldn't have even stood at the start line, and not eating. And like, I just stopped eating, like, because I was having a mental health crisis. And when I do that, I stop eating. And I ran for 20 to 30 miles holding a sandwich Lorna had given me, refusing to eat it, but holding it in front of her. Like, I've got the sandwich.
You are failing to do your job because I am not eating this.
Yeah, this is Gollum's sandwich. I'm going to the bin when I see a bin. There's no bins on the South Downs Way, so I ended up carrying it for about 20 miles. But angrily throwing it in a bin.
I want to throw it in the bin dramatically, yet I am not willing to litter. And so I'm in a really hard position.
Also, I'm starving. I'm so hungry.
don't look, so I can have a little bit.
It's like utter mentalism. But it was my worst performance. Like, just as a brat, I just turned into a 4-year-old child. I was completely.
It sounds like a child. Like, I will refuse to eat.
This is a public apology. I'm sorry, Dana. I'm sorry. I really am sorry. I told you to fuck off with your best friend, Julius. Those are the words I used. I'm sorry.
Oh, this is good. I hope this has been cathartic so far.
It is cathartic. I feel quite calm.
So let's talk about the big thing that how long ago was it now? How do you feel like you've processed ARC?
Hey guys, there's this race on the Southwest Coast Path called the ARC of Attrition, and it runs from Coverack down the bottom all the way around Lizard and Land's End, then up the top to Port Leven.
A nice jaunt along a promenade.
A bimble. A flat bimble.
It must be lovely. That's where people go on holiday. So it must be lovely.
People go on holiday to Land's End all the time. It's beautiful. Except it's the 28th of January. And to be fair, the weather was really good. But it was my A game race. I was really, I'd wrecked the whole route. I was like, I'm going to finish this. And then sort of built it up into my head as if, I didn't even think about not finishing it. I was like, this is it. This is the one, right? This is like the one. And everything was great and everything was wonderful. And then suddenly it wasn't. I pulled out mile 75, which was the first time I've ever DNF'd a race that's meant something to me. And it was really horrible. But it was, when I did it, I can still remember me going, I'm done. And that was, I couldn't have done anything else because I started to get quite sick, and sorry about this, listeners, get quite sick, shitting yourself every 10 minutes, literally. And I had no energy left and I couldn't keep anything down, and I hadn't really thought that might happen. So I not bought anything with me that I could, like, I'd not bought Tailwind or Mountain Fuel or anything. I could just drink and then throw up water and still be okay.
When did it feel like, just kind of like take us through the race then, like on the start line, You were ultra prepared for this. It seemed like you're super prepared. You'd recce the route. You'd done everything, and I think you were, like you said, you know, basically speaking at the National Running Show and everything. It was just like, Ali's going to breeze this one. This looks like, you know, she has got this.
Everyone was saying that. And I'm like, and to be fair, I was like, I think I probably am.
No, exactly. And that's the thing. Your record shows that this wouldn't be an issue. But then this race has undone lots and lots of people, hasn't it? That's the thing. It is one of the races that undoes people. Some, you know, incredibly experienced. So standing on that start line, like, how are you feeling then?
So when I got there, first off, when I got there, I went to pick up my number and they put a little gold star on the bottom of it. And I was like, nice. What is that?
Celeb. Celeb VIP.
Expected podium finish. Expected top 10 finish. And I'm like, are you joking?
Was it really?
Yeah, it was expected top 10 finish. And I was like,
no pressure.
And Stephen, not my cousins, was there filming for Film My Run. And he was giving it the big one. Bless him. I loved Stephen, but he was like, yeah, so. And I'm like, where have they got this information that I might finish top 10? He's like, me. I told him. Like, so what you've done is you've scraped the barrel of people you know are taking part, and I'm one of the only people you know, and you've given them my number. And now the teacher has given me a gold star before I've even done anything. And I was like,
but why? Why put a little gold star on it?
So that he, so if the stewards see you, they're like, oh, you're a gold star, go talk to Stephen. And it's like, and he'll be there, and like, it's dark and stuff, he can't see people. Yeah. However, as I left that room, that was the last time I saw Stephen, not my cousins. I didn't see him again because I was really far behind. So Jay was there from Sussex Trail Events, Jay McArdle. James Elson was also running it, and I'm very good mates with both of them. So we were sat at the back of the bus, literally the back of the bus, on the way to the start, taking the piss out of Jay.
Oh, there's a little bus to the start. Nice.
Yeah, it's like an hour-long bus to the start. So you sit there. So you get there.
What's the start time?
12 noon.
Oh, that's not too bad.
It's awful. It's January. So 12 noon, you've got 4 hours of light. Then you go into a 14-hour night.
The thing is, I can't. It's awful, isn't it, when you just want to start the race.
I got up at bloody 6 o'clock, had my breakfast, went to registration because registration shuts at 8:30. Then you have to be on the bus by 8:30. There's a lot of waiting around.
Yeah.
Then you wait around at the start. We were really lucky with the weather that it wasn't raining because they put you in a car park, no shelter. So you could end up being absolutely soaked before you even start because we stood in that car park for an hour.
Is it designed for that so that you're hitting a certain point at night time and going through the night? What's the thinking behind that?
I think it's designed to give you minimal sleep. So you've obviously been up since 6, getting your stuff together. Then then in your head, you're like, right, 4 hours of light to 4 o'clock. I'm going to smash this 4 hours. So if you do that, as I found out, you really undo yourself for the rest of it. Because once, especially if you're not recce. I mean, I had recce and I found it hard enough. But
I love the idea. I love the idea of people smashing the first 4 hours.
They are. But I was with Jay and James was long gone. He was up in the top three. And I was with Jay and some of his mates. And we were having a really nice time. But I was keeping up with the boys. I was like it wasn't like we were running 7.5 minute miles, but we were going too fast.
Was it faster than your normal pace?
Faster than what I would want to do at that point.
Right, okay.
But I was like, oh man, we kept sort of overtaking each other. The coast path is an absolute bastard. But it was in really good condition because it hadn't rained for 3 weeks. The best condition it's ever been in.
Yeah.
So everything's in line for like, there's not going to be any rain, no storms. Everything's in line for this perfect finish. And I got support. I don't know why, but I got this obsession with the cutoffs. And I was like, you have to be 2 hours ahead of the cutoff, Sally. Why? But I did. And I got into Portohowen, which is the first, there's a checkpoint at 25 miles and then one at about 45 miles and then one at about like 60 miles and then 75 at St. Ives. That's the final checkpoint. All you need to do is get to St. Ives and you've got hours to finish the rest of it.
Right.
So it's getting into those checkpoints.
So sprint it to mile 75. That's the tactic.
And so I got into the first one 2 hours before cutoff and I was like, and it just started to get dark. And I had a little bowl of beans down my gullet and everyone's like sitting around at the checkpoint having a chat and I'm like, ha! Idiots, I'm gonna go.
You're supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to get out of there as soon as possible. That is centurion thinking.
To, You know, with your car, right? You see, it's a little bit like driving your car to the forecourt of a petrol station, put your drip of petrol into it, then speeding off back down the motorway when you've not got that much petrol in your car. But grabbing a Costa at the same time. So I went out, I got out that checkpoint and it started to get dark, and then got to the next one. It's quite hard in the dark. It's a very technical trail, but I knew the route. I've done the route. I knew it. And then the next one's at Penzance. And as you go into Penzance, there's a 7.5 mile flat bit of road to run on. And I knew that was there. So I was like, I'm going to run that at 8-9 minute miles, like make hay. And it was horrible. And because suddenly you're on this flat and you're going relatively quickly. After Penzance checkpoint, it starts to get really gnarly. You go up through Mousel and then you are on the coast path. And that's where people talk about the drops of going to the sea, and there's like rocks and smashing waves. And that's that. You're right on the edge of the coast path. But I didn't have a problem with it because I'd already wrecked it. It was fine. Yeah. And the wheels started to fall off after Lamorna Cove when it turns into, there's no one there. There's nothing. There's just the sea and the rocks and people's headlamps.
And what mile is that?
That's about mile 48, 50.
Right.
Land's End is at mile 55, but it takes so long to get to Land's End because up and down and round and up and down. And I was knackered. I'd been eating all the whole time, but looking back on it, I hadn't been eating the right stuff. I'd eaten sandwiches, I'd eaten yogurts, I'd eaten crisps and biscuits and all the stuff I should.
And is that what you would normally have on, say, like, like a Centurion race?
Yeah, for example. The thing is, a Centurion race compared to the Arc is relatively flat.
Yeah.
And the Centurion race compared to the Arc is in the day. So eating's a lot easier because it's not the middle of the night with a head torch with a wind blowing and a bit of rain, go like rooting through the boot of a car. And I had Duncan, Julius, Lorna as my crew, and they were all brilliant. But I wasn't direct with my instructions to them. I really wasn't. And so I was like, going through, oh, fancy a bit of that, fancy a bit of this. Usually on a Centurion race, I'd have a bag every 25 miles that had the same stuff in it each time. I'd grab one of those and just eat that. But I really hadn't. I was like, I eat to feel. I eat to how I feel. I ended up, looking back, eating way too much fibre, which my stomach couldn't, I keep wanting to say cogitate, digest it. Because I'd gone too quick, so the blood was in my leg. My stomach wasn't happy. I should have just been eating soft baby food or something. And then I had in my head, I was like, once you get to Land's End, you're going to take half an hour. You're going to sit in Land's End. You might get changed. You might have a decent meal of food. But you're going to take half an hour. Pull your thoughts together, because then you're going into the Badlands. And the Badlands is Land's End to Zenna. They're on the top of the coast path. There is nothing. There's no roads. There's nothing. It's just wind and awful terrain. And it's a bit like being in a Daphne du Maurier novel. Like, it's like,
it's a wind sweat. I had to put a dress on for it
and
storm into the wind.
Yeah. And there's ghost ships smashing on the rocks. There actually are these feral ponies that will just come at you. And I'm like, please don't let them be there. I had to do a diversion.
Imagine DNFing because you got assaulted by a pony.
By a feral pony. Brilliant. I didn't. I got to Land's End. It was raining. It was windy. I kept thinking there was a container ship off the coast of Land's End. I thought that was the Land's End Hotel lights, but it wasn't. It was a boat really far away. And as you look in the dark at Land's End, there's not one coast path. There's 100 million spidery little paths.
Oh.
There's rabbits bouncing everywhere. There's mice. It's muddy. And then eventually you see the glimmer of the Land's End Hotel. And I was just like, I am just so tired. I'm just so tired. And three in the morning.
That thing where you talk about like diverging paths and having loads of paths, when that hits you at the wrong time, it can really fuck with you.
Because
it's just that it's adding a load of uncertainty that you just don't need at that point. And then you start to second guess yourself and it's horrific.
Like, and they're like spidering off across like over what are basically sheer drops. And there's no one to keep to. You just have to like, you've got the route on your watch, but you can't do everything. You've got like a massive coat on. You're trying to pull it across your watch. Your head torch is going weird.
Yeah.
You're tired. And you just... it's really difficult. And I wasn't with my mates. Like, usually I'll have a pacer by that point, or some of my mates, but everyone had really scattered. And it was just really difficult. And I get this, like, slight anger, where like, that no one's there for me. It's like a deep, this is being very vulnerable, it's like a deep-rooted, like, childish anger that everyone's abandoned me. You're a fucking 100-mile race guy on your own. No one's abandoned you. You paid to do it, you idiot.
But I'm like, you bastard.
Hey, everybody's abandoned me, left me here to die.
What would have paid to have had your thoughts at that moment? They're not even there, and they're getting abused.
Shit. Laura's getting shit because she's not there, even though she's not allowed to be there, she's not supposed to be there. Like,
when you're there, you get it. When you're not there, you get it.
Why didn't you just pop up behind the bush? Like, Christ's sake, woman. Anyway, I got there. I'm really sorry to the Archangels because I just wasn't talking at that point. I was like, I need to get into and get some
food. The Archangels.
The Archangels are their marshals, and the Archangels find you and will direct you in the right direction as you come into a checkpoint because they know you're a bit wobbly. When I got there to the checkpoint, it was really windy, really cold. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning, really rainy. Julius, Duncan, Lorna were there, but they were freezing and they were all in their dry robes.
Yeah.
And they weren't allowed into Land's End, into the hotel bit. And I thought that they would be to allow to sit in the crew area, but they weren't. They were all like dying, like little smiles on their faces. So I was like, I need to be as quick as possible. So I, instead of going, go and get back in your car, thanks for all my kit, I'm going to sit down for 20 minutes in there, go to sleep. I went in, had another bowl of beans and left. I was probably there for 10 minutes, came outside, got my stuff off them, like my like whatever shit I picked up, I can't even remember what I picked up off them, and went. So I didn't have this half hour break where I was going to eat proper meal and calm myself down and maybe put on a dry base layer. I just went.
But why? What was going through your mind at that point?
I was like,
then?
I just want them to go and get, I just want to go away. I want to go and get in the car. I feel really bad that they're cold and wet. Which is not how you treat your crew. Like, I went from being an arsehole to them to worrying about their state of health. Like, I've ricocheted from being the world's worst.
You bastards, you're not here. Now you're here. I've got to look after you.
To being little Miss Altruism, the martyr. Oh, no, it's okay. You go and get in the car.
This is brilliant. It's like you're going through the different ages of being both the toddler and also being a parent at the same time.
I know. And then when I left Land's End to get onto the Badlands, and I really should have taken some time to really put my headphones in, listen to a bit of motivational, that's fucking get on with this music. I really should have, but I didn't, and that was a big mistake. And I only had a bowl of beans. And the other thing about Centurion races, they are gnarly. Some of them, South Downs is gnarly, North Downs is gnarly. But again, because it's light for a lot of it, you are eating very regularly, and you're not burning as many calories as you are on that coast path. And I was, burning thousands of calories and not putting those calories back in at the same rate.
And how are you physically at that point? Did it feel like everything was okay physically?
Yeah, physically it was fine. I was I was hungry, but I didn't know what I wanted, and I was tired. But tiredness goes away, doesn't it? Like, I was like, when the dawn breaks, the tiredness will go away, because it does. It just does. The tiredness you can get over. But as I left Land's End and went down to Senen, after you get onto the beach at Senen, I really can't explain to anyone that's not done it before or not been to that part of the world what it's like, but Senen, there's nothing. It's like those in the 80s when you watch those films and they landed on different planets and there was nothing. It's like that, and it's got this howling wind, spitty rain, no one to talk to, and this thought of, right, it's now, what, 17, 20 miles to St Ives. I have to make it to St Ives. And I have no idea how I'm going to do it because some of these miles will take me half an hour to do a mile. Because
that's just demoralising, isn't it?
It's just so demoralising. And then I was like, I'll get light soon, but it wouldn't get light soon. I'm used to it getting light at five, on hundreds, I'm used to it getting light at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. Didn't get light till, what, 7:30?
Yeah.
And then it all just started, and then I started to feel sick, then I was sick, and then I tried to eat a banana and that came back up, and then I started shitting myself on the fucking coast path, and I was like, everything's coming out, don't want to eat anything. And by the time I got to Zena, and Zena is about seven, people are going to say this is wrong, but I can't remember it, about 7 miles, 10 miles from St Ives, I literally had so little energy that I just sat down on a rock. And as I was coming down hills, like my legs were going out from underneath me, I just had nothing, literally nothing left.
Yeah.
Like nothing. There was fumes and that was it. And I knew I wouldn't make it to the St. Ives checkpoint. Or I knew if I did make it to the St. Ives checkpoint, because I'd already reckoned that, I knew exactly what was ahead of me, that it would be minutes to spare. And I was like, I can't, there's nothing I can do now. Even if I put in a load of shot blocks or caffeine or whatever it is, I'm done. I've just left, it's too late. And so, and I was absolutely gutted about it. And I wrote a big blog about it. But in that moment, on that sitting there, that was the right decision because it was the only decision. But it was literally the only decision. And it was really horrible. And Lorna came to pick me up and I just texted Lorna and I was like, I can't do it. I'd done that a few times and they kept me going, like through Pendine, through Cape Cornwall. And they'd be like, come on, you've got this. But then being like, come on, you've got this, when I knew they were laying in bed, pissed me off even more. Oh my God. I was like, how dare they? They don't know my struggle. It's like, why is I some fucking narcissist, like writing my own book? Like, it's ridiculous. So that pissed me off. How dare they have a sleep? Arseholes. And Lorna turned up and she just said to me, I sat on a rock and I was like, I was like, no. She bought me new shoes and everything. She's like, come on, let's go. And I'm like, no. And she said to me, listen to me, Harry. This is not my fault. You will not talk to me about this. You will not cry about it all the time. You will not say that it was anything to do with us. This is your decision. And I was like, okay. I'm sorry. She was like, I don't want to hear anything more about it. Okay? Nothing more about it.
When Lorna bites back.
Yeah. Now get your stuff, get in the car. And I was like, right, I better not talk about this anymore. And we went and had a coffee and then I went home and went to bed. And then I was like,
and then you woke up going, why did she let me quit?
How could you let me quit? You knew I could keep going. You just wanted to get in the car and get warm, didn't you? Your dry robe. Like,
you wanted me to fail.
Yeah, Lorna's fail. Just because you want to have a go and win it and get the trophy. Like,
oh, my God.
But so yeah, she's obviously got like PTSD from what happened before.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's,
you know what, we need to get in the car and go fucking berserk at her, rip her head off.
She didn't say that to you like before anything or anything else. She said at exactly the right moment, like, you can quit, but these are the conditions.
Yeah, these are your quit conditions. And it was really horrible. It was massive relief. And then, yeah, and that was it. Like, even when I got home, I couldn't really eat anything. And I learned loads of lessons from it. But at the time, it felt like I had fucked up so monumentally. I was really embarrassed because I really hadn't got around saying I was going to finish it. But I really had a lot of people that were watching me and I had a lot of people on the dot watching thing. And I had a lot of people, even my dad, who I don't really talk to my dad, but even he was texting me, like, watching me. And I just felt I'd let people down, and which is I think a common thing, but you haven't really let anyone down, it's your choice. And ultimately, looking back on it now, I've learned so much from it, and I've learned it's your race, you do what you want, fuck crew. They're there to crew you, like, don't be a bastard to them, but at the same time, I need to
yeah,
do what
they
I need
to yeah exactly
and not,
exactly.
not worry about them. And they did such a great job, all of them. I'm so grateful to all of them. And ultimately, 75 miles, that's the world's best recce to do it again, isn't it?
We talk about this loads, don't we, when we interview people, and it's sometimes, and it's it sometimes seems that we sometimes highlight some of their failures more than, and some of their, yeah, things that have gone wrong. But those are the moments when you really learn stuff. Those are the moments where you really, and the thing is, if you are turning up and, you know, you're smashing 100 milers all the time, then it's showing that, you know, you've nailed that and you need to do things. If you're not failing at races, if you're not going to a race and struggling so much that you tap out or whatever, you know, doing that shows that you're pushing yourself. There's nothing, the problem is, it's really easy to compare with someone like Beth Pascal, who just goes, oh, well, I just went and ran it. And then everyone thinks that that's just what you do. And you do, oh, well, I just went and ran it. And I finished. And I actually also won it as well at the same time. It's not like that. I mean, how many times has Jason done it? And how many times has he not finished it?
Oh, Jay, I think Jay, it took him three times to finish it. I think so. Oh, he's run it three times and he's DNF twice. I can't remember. But he has offered to sell me his buckle for 20 quid. So that's good. but one of the things I kind of came to realise, and I am, because I'm doing a lot of, hey man, a lot of self-discovery at the moment, was one of the things, even if I've turned it around to this, because I was so annoyed with myself, fucked off with myself, because I've been through hard races, really hard.
Sorry, you were fucked off with yourself because you DNF'd.
Yeah, I was so angry because I was like, it is hard, Ali. Everyone finds it hard. You gave up. You gave up because it was too... And it's like, really, if I'm going to look at the facts, I remember coming down that hill at Zenit and my legs just buckling and just me thinking, I'm so fucked that I can't go on. And I came to the conclusion when I wrote that blog that I spent a lot of time, a lot of my life being fucking horrible to myself. And ultimately, that DNF was the ultimate act of self-love. It was like, you can push to St. Ives. You can push, but you're fucked. Like, is this the best thing for your physical health? Is it the best thing for your mental health? Is it the best thing to put pressure on medics if you do decide you're just going to fucking collapse? Like, so those things probably won't happen. But it was the ultimate act of kindness to myself. And then in coming back and looking at it afterwards, I'm like, the kindest way to look at this is it was a really good learning curve, really, really good. And you would never have had that learning curve any other way. I didn't have it in the recces because I was like gamboling gaily along during the day with pickle, like eating sandwiches on rocks. Like, I know I recced the route, but not the conditions and not how you feel for that long at night. Like, and you know, with talking about people going, who you look at and compare yourself to, and like, for example, Jasmine on Barclay, there would have been a time when I would have been like, Jasmine, why couldn't you just finish the five loops? Come on, Jasmine. But I totally understand that feeling of I'm done. Like, and I don't think it's a Goggins, you know, if it was David Goggins.
That was going to be my next question. At 75 miles, do you think you're only doing 20%? Because there's still another 80% in you.
Yeah, there's like, I kept thinking about NIMS and I kept thinking about like, if you think you're fucked, you're only 45% fucked. And I'm like, no, I'm 99% fucked. I am 99% fucked. Like, there is like, all that stuff. But you're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. Even when we interview people like Beth, and even when we interview people like Damo or read their books, you're still only seeing 4%. You're not seeing that in a battle of, okay, let's fucking look at what we've got going on here. This is going to be a horrendous decision to have to make. You're just not. And even when they do, when these people in the who we all see in the public eye as ultra runners, even when they do DNF, you never really get the full story of how they came to that conclusion. You'll either get my leg snapped off and I had to stop, or it had a really serious groin injury or whatever it was, or you don't get a story. And it is a mental horror show. And I went through 2 weeks of feeling absolutely shit. But I was so lucky to have people around me that understood. James Elson was so, so supportive. And I spoke to him quite a lot about it. He told me about when he did Spartathlon and he DNF'd that. And he was like, it basically ruined my life. And it seems so pathetic to it's such a small thing. But for you, it's not, because it's really important to you. And he went, and you know, he said, when you go back and do it again, and you know, eventually you'll get to that point where you manage to do it, it's even better. So I'm signed up again. I'm going to go back next year and I'm going to learn from the mistakes that I've made and change the things I can change with the set. I've got the same crew. In fact, oh no, I was going to say I had Lawrence, but Lawrence is doing it with me. Me and Lawrence are running the Ark. Listen, everyone, we're running the Ark of Attrition together. We're going to be tied together for the whole thing. He doesn't know that yet. But yeah,
What do you think you'd do differently then?
I would structure my eating a lot better. The Ark's not like other races where other hundreds where you can just go, it's all right. I'll have usually got a bag of crisps, a couple of chocolate bars, a yogurt, a banana every 25 miles, a sandwich, a little bit of dinner in the middle. I always have a bit of dinner in the middle, always at like 55 miles. Didn't have any dinner. I just didn't have any because I was like, oh, I was so worried about
a technically harder race, more physical, and you're eating less than you would.
I did not make myself a priority in that race. Oh, that's my dog barking. I did not make myself a priority in that race. I don't know why I prioritised other people, but I did. And I don't know why that was. But I should... It's a completely selfish thing, ultra running. It really is a completely... It's just you. It's all about you. It's the Bailey show. And I didn't do that. I let weird things happen where I... God, can you hear her? She's really noisy.
Yeah.
Someone's here. I let things happen. I let my brain start to tell me things that I shouldn't have let it start to tell me. And so I just have to focus on me, and I have to, and I find it sort of embarrassing just for the focus to be on me. I don't like being on stage on my own. I don't like talking on podcast by myself. I don't like people looking at me, and I feel like
an ultra celeb who doesn't like people looking at me.
And I hate it when people say things like that, because it's just because I have more followers than anyone else. It's not because I am very good at it. People, you're usually famous for being very, very good at something, but it's like, yeah. Basically, it is a selfish pursuit, and it's like I've got to allow myself to be the centre of attention and for it all to be about me. That's what I've got to do, and that's quite narcissistic, isn't it?
I'm not sure it's narcissistic. The thing is, you're doing a athletic endeavour that requires you to just think about yourself. There's no you know, if you think about Olympic athletes or anything else like that, everything is built around them. If you start thinking about other things, if you start bringing those other things in, and to some extent, if you start worrying what other people think about you, because I know, you know, that there was a point where the label of a DNF, I think, kind of, I don't know whether it scared you or you didn't like it or something like that, but you were very clear about that you weren't ever going to DNF. And I wonder how much that plays a part in it as well. The fact
I'm going to answer this, but I'm just going to get my dog up here to stop her barking. Hang on a minute.
I'm going to get my dog up here to answer the question.
That's better.
I thought you were about to say, I'm going to get my dog up here to answer that question for you. It's like, what?
Pickle doesn't.
Yeah, my spokesperson.
I've never DNF'd anything in my life.
I never DNF'd. I told her. I said to her,
here's an idea, mummy. Stop being such a fucking pussy. So, yeah, I was always very scared. You know what? I used to go around boasting about the fact I didn't have a DNF. I've never DNF'd anything in my life.
Well, I don't think that's the thing. That's why I'm curious about now that you have DNF. Was that because of fear of it? Or was that because of just not ever having, never been pushing yourself to a point where you could understand a DNF? What's kind of behind that?
There's quite a large conversation behind this from the stuff that I've been reading about. I don't read about DNFs, but I've been reading about how humans see themselves. And I think a lot of it centers everything that we don't want, or everything that we fear, is based around shame. Okay. So shame is the fucker. That's why people don't admit they have alcohol problems or drug problems or sexual problems or any of this. It's shame. And if shame,
you're talking to me directly here, like, what?
Yes. And shame, and if you're honest, there could be no shame. If there is light, like, shade breeds in the dark. It cannot breed in the light. It just can't. So, and I've learned a lot about that. When I was before I stopped fucking about with myself and drinking too much, like for the last 20 years, I have thought that not finishing something you say you're going to do is embarrassing. And I don't want people to find me out. You know how everyone's got that, oh man, someone's going to find out I'm not very good at this. Someone's going to find out I don't know what I'm doing. Like, no one knows what they're doing, and everyone has their flaws. But you're like, as a personal thing, every single person listening to this podcast will understand what I'm saying, unless they're a sociopath. So I was,
and there's a lot of them listening to the podcast as well. So they're going, that doesn't apply to me. If you're saying that, you're a sociopath.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm brilliant, because I proved to everyone that I'm a good ultra runner, because I've never not finished any ultra. That doesn't prove you're a good ultra runner, or that doesn't prove anything to anybody. Yeah. And no one cares except you, but you seem to think that everyone does care. No one fucking
cares. No one
shit.
Fucking cares.
No one even cares about this conversation me and you're having. Probably four people care. but it's the shame of, oh no, I'm not the person that I've made myself out to be.
I haven't lived up to the unrealistic expectations that I set myself.
For no reason. Yeah, like, so it's just a change. Like, I was gutted. I really was gutted. I would have loved to have finished it. But the reasons I'm gutted are different from the reasons they would have been a year ago. I wouldn't have been like, you're a piece
of shit. Was going to be my next question.
Yeah, it wouldn't be, you're a piece of shit, give up. A year ago, I would have gone home. I would have drunk at least three bottles of rosé. I would have felt very, very sorry for myself for a long time. And this was a different feeling. It wasn't that I felt sorry for myself. I was annoyed, but I was annoyed I'd have to pay to do it again. And I was annoyed that I paid loads of money for the Airbnb and wasted people's... I felt like I wasted the crew's time. But again, that's a story I'm telling myself, because the crew, Lorna and Lawrence and Duncan and Lorna, had a great weekend away in a nice Airbnb in Cornwall. Like, they had a great time. They went out for lunch. They're like, were playing around with the dogs. Like, so no one's had a shit time. And I haven't ruined anything for anyone.
And they're doing it because they want to do it.
Yeah, and I was able to kind of really, and also because I had the support of people like James on the end of the phone, Lawrence on the end of the phone, Lorna, I was able to kind of, not Lorna, I'm not allowed to talk to Lorna about it. Lorna. Yeah. I spoke to Lorna about it because she told me not to, so I'm not going to ever mention it.
I need to do a separate interview with Lorna and cut bits into this interview.
We've got
at this
WhatsApp
point,
group.
Lorna had something to say about this.
We got a WhatsApp group called Arc Domination, and I felt like taking out the word arc and just putting star, star, star domination, because I'm not allowed to talk about the arc. So I'm just going to change the name of the WhatsApp group. But yeah, it's a very different way of looking at stuff. And also the whole thing about failure, you know, it's not, failure is failure. If failure is a word, it's a word that has got negative connotations attached to it. But at the end of the day, our entire existences are built on failure. Everything we do is the way we eat.
That's absolutely true.
The fact that we can use a toilet, because there was a time when we used to not use a toilet and shit in our nappies, and it was by constantly doing that that we learned to use a toilet. Everything, driving, everything we do is based on doing something and learning it. And the very nature of learning is failure.
Absolutely.
You fail, you do it again. You fail, you do it again. But we, as humans, put these negative connotations on the word failure. You know, DNF, did not finish. Why can't we call it something like did a bit of learning, or maybe next time, or not quite yet? Like, it's all about how you perceive it. And I don't want to go out and be like one of those positive people all the time, because I'm not a positive person all the time, but I'm a normal person. And I feel fucking gutted about it, and I'm upset about it. But what I'm going to do is go, I'm going to go back next year and do it. And I know the pitfalls now, and I am going to make a point of briefing my crew, because I didn't brief my crew before. I was like, oh, they know me, they'll be fine. For a race like that, you have to brief your crew on everything you want them to do and every meal you want them to have prepared. Like, I wish I'd said to them, make sure there is something to make hot water, and as I come in, I will WhatsApp you, like when I'm a little way out, or look at the tracker and make me a pot noodle and just give it to me so I can just eat it as I walk away, because I don't want to hang around. I just want to, but if you're forcing this hot food on me, I may well eat it. What I won't do is sit in a checkpoint with a load of other people, because I don't like listening to them talking, and I don't want to sit there, and
yeah.
I just want to get out. So it's about thinking about what I want to do when I'm eating, what I'm going to eat, and give them really clear instruction. And I think maybe say to them, this is fun, but treat it as a job. She's in. She needs her wheels changed, a bit like you're doing a Formula One car, and then tell her to fuck off. And that's what I watched Dom do with Lorna at Thames Park. There was no nonsense.
I think you come across as too capable, because I've always found that whenever you've got Lorna as your pacer, the best thing to do is literally pretend that you don't know how to do anything so that it all gets done for you. That's...
Literally become a baby.
Become a big baby and just, you know, I could do this thing, but I tell you what, Lorna will be able to second guess it and do it better than me. So she might, we were talking about delegation actually when before we started talking, and I said that I'm difficult delegating. Not in that situation at all.
I think now I've ruined it with Lorna, because I think she's a little bit scared of me. She's scared of that, me suddenly ripping off my face, that monster coming at me, which it probably, hopefully, won't. Like, and I think to everyone on that crew, to Julius and Dunk and Lorna, that race is frightening. And I don't think they understand what it's like. With a Centurion race, you've done the volunteering loads, you've seen
it's a big part of kind of learning the Centurion thing by doing the volunteering.
You know what people are going through. Lorna said to me before we did this, for the event, she was like, I'm super excited to see how this whole thing works. I want to see what it's like. I want to see how it works. I want to see how the competitors go. Because I think it's a bit of a freak show, because it's so hard. It's a fucking hard race. And it's so different. And it is a freak show. You have people like Mark Derbyshire who are like, 17 hours, I think it took, or something ludicrous for him to do it. What the actual fuck? Like, you know, Nikki Spinks holds all those world records. She came in 25 hours. James Elson came in 26 and a half, I think. He had sleep for an hour and 45 minutes at 7 because he felt sick. but it still came in 26 hours. Like,
it's amazing, isn't it? It's amazing. I mean, there's a few races, aren't there, that are like that, that really, it's almost like experience. It shakes your experience. It shakes that you've got all this experience and you feel completely confident about how capable you are. Yet, like the number of variables, the terrain, everything else that can happen, or how your body feels on the day, which is, again, complete lottery, all can conspire for you to finish. What's the finish rate? What is the completion rate?
The DNF rate generally, for the whole of its history, has been about 60 to 70%.
Oh, wow.
So it's a high DNF rate.
That's really high.
I think this year's completion rate was quite relatively high because the weather was really good.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of people that were coming back. So when you got on that bus, a lot of people had already given it a go. There were a couple of newbies, but they were quite young. Like, I met a couple of kids. They're kids because they're 28.
Kids,
like, these young lads,
those young, like, whippersnappers,
super cute young lads who are like, oh yeah, I'm a little bit nervous, and then you're like, you bouncy little fucker, look at you, like,
you're not supposed to do this at 28. You're supposed to have life ravage you and then do it.
Yeah, one of them was like, it's my first 100, and I'm like, good luck, he finished.
You're supposed to have a whole shitload of demons that you have to work through while running. No, you don't come to this with a blank canvas.
Yeah, you know, at Pendine Watch, you're supposed to rip your shirt off and like claw at your own skin and scream into the howling wind and then keep going. You know, you're supposed to do that. Like, it is a freak show. It's a bit like Barclay. You know, when you explain Barclay to someone that doesn't understand, that has never been to an ultra or doesn't know ultra runners or hasn't lived in an ultra running world, and they're just like, oh yeah, right. And you're like, no, you don't understand how hard that race is. Like, even people, I think you and I don't understand how hard.
No, that's the thing, we don't understand. I mean, you keep seeing the thing, like someone's out there for 20 something hours and you're like, how? It's so incomprehensible.
How can Jasmine have taken 14 hours for a loop for 25 miles?
It's one of those things that's completely incomprehensible unless you've done it.
And I think, you know, I'm not comparing the arc in any way, but it is gnarly. And the thing is, you forget, like, I've not sat down and gone, well done, Ali, you did 75 miles on one of the hardest coastal paths in the UK. I've gone down and gone, fuck, you didn't do the 100 miles. And people have said, but you did do 75. And I'm like, yeah, but I didn't do 100. And you dismiss that. And I have actually taken some time now to sit down and go, you did do that, and that is a long way. And you did it in an all right time. I was down to walk in, so I was probably not going to hit that cutoff at St Ives. But the cutoffs are punchy. It's a hard race. It is hard. Like, all 100 milers are hard. And I think that's the other thing. If you've done a few
I mean, this is so ridiculous, isn't it? What kind of point have we got to when we're just comparing 100 milers and going, well, those ones are a little bit easier. I mean, those are kind of straightforward.
Pretty easy.
When I still tell people that some people do run 100 miles, there's some people like, what? What? That, surely that's not possible.
It's not even some people. You remember when we were at the running show and we were in that Wetherspoons in Birmingham? If we'd have locked the door, told everyone to listen to us, and explained some of the things that just that little group of people had done running wise, they wouldn't have believed us. They would have been agape. You could run 50 whole miles in one go. People are like, we live in a fucking bubble, in an echo chamber. We think everyone understands this. They don't, because it's a very niche sport. We have a very niche audience. Although I like to think, you know, our audience is more, a little bit more open, and like all the stuff about like the mental side of it and the funny side of it and the fun races and all that sort of stuff. But what we do is extremely niche. And I don't think any of us as ultra runners give ourselves a pat on the back and go, and there is that stupid thing of, well, you're doing better than the person on the couch, but you are doing better than the person on the couch. And to measure your success against the greats, I don't know. Like, sometimes
It'd
gone the other way. You know, when you look at the track,
who's the real winner in this situation? The person on the couch doing nothing, or
a tramp laughing at a bin, and you're like, actually, I was doing that on the South West Coast a couple of weeks ago, but I paid to do it.
And trained 6 months to be able to do. Who's winning in that situation? This guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I've I'm not over it, but I've re-entered. for next year.
But are you right? So this is an important question. Are you, you know, because you seem to have processed it really well. But
yeah.
Are you, you know, if anyone says anything about it, would you be like, you don't know what it fucking is, or would you be like, okay?
No, right, I'm okay. Perfect. I'm actually super comfortable with it now. I wasn't for 2 weeks. I was really, really, really upset, and I would just cry in the car for no reason. I think because I'd really.
Well, you've got, there's a physical reaction to it as well. It's not,
yeah, it was almost like a shock.
Not just mental, yeah.
It was like almost like a shock as well. It was like, oh, fuck. Like, I knew that was a possibility, but I didn't think it would happen because I was doing the positive mindset of, oh, you're going to be okay. You've done the work. I think that's it. You've done the work. It's like going into exam when you've done all of the work for the exam and the questions are just questions that trip you up or just bits you've missed.
You've done the work isn't enough, is it? And that's it. Yeah,
I can say to people, like, it'll be okay, go and do it again. I understand that anyone listening to this that has DNF'd anything, a marathon, anything, I understand how that is deep hurt. It's like hurt, like you've been really hurt, like someone's promised you something and hasn't come through, and you feel let down. And the only person that's really let you down is yourself. It's your own expectation, and it fucking hurts. And it's okay. But the first thing is, it's okay to feel like that. It's not a little thing. It's a big thing for you because you've worked hard for it. And the second thing is to really take a step back from it. And I wrote all this down in that blog, which is a fucking great read, by the way. I wrote it all down in that blog, and then I went through it and I pulled out the facts about what happened. And there aren't that many. It's a big story I've put around it. The fact is, I didn't put myself first. I didn't brief my crew properly, and I did not plan to eat properly. And the most important thing is, I didn't have a backup plan for when it all went tits up, because I don't do tailwind or mountain fuel. I need to now. Now I'm on the mountain fuel because I'm like, I need to test what I can have that's liquid. So if that does happen again, I've got a backup plan. So I've learned from it, and I'm not 100% comfortable with it. But looking back, I'm cool with it. And I've got Dragon's Back in September, which is the most terrifying thing I've ever done. But already I'm factoring in these, how are you going to cope on this day if this happens? How, because I can't just melt down. I have to, you have to learn from it, don't you?
Yeah.
Having said that, there is no one walks around all like, oh, I've worked this out now and everything's fine. There'll be times where I cry about it. There'll be times where I feel like a piece of shit. There'll be times where I'm bitterly disappointed. But for the most part, I think I've learned a lot of lessons from it. And I'm so grateful to the people that have supported me through it, who don't just go, oh, it's just a race. Oh, it's just a race, Ali. But the people that have gone, yeah, man, it fucking hurts. It fucking hurts. It's horrible. So, yeah, I'm happy with it. I'm at peace with it. I'm going back. I'm going to go back, and this time I'm going to fucking enjoy myself.
Well, I'm thinking this from a purely selfish perspective. And I've got to say that I am partly pleased that you DNF'd. And I'm partly pleased the point at which you DNF'd. Because 75 miles is what fraction of 100 miles?
Don't ask me maths questions.
Right? 3/4.
75%.
3/4.
3/4. All right, then.
You're on the new 3/4.
At last.
I can exercise my demons.
I don't want to be.
You're the new 3/4.
I don't want to be.
This is your nuts.
I want you to call me something better than that, like the great coastal hope. The hope I have for next year. Not the new three quarters. The new nuts challenge.
Oh my goodness. It's gonna, I'm not,
that was like that, you saying that, I was like, what the fuck is he talking about? Suddenly everything from the last 4 years flashed between my, for like the first time I listened to the podcast, I was like, hey, these guys are quite interesting. Wow. Big. Are you doing any running?
I am running, but I've basically cancelled all of my races. At the moment, I'm running probably about half an hour a day, but I can't run more than, say, 10 minutes without having to stop because of my breathing.
Oh, is this a COVID thing?
Yeah. It's weird. Like, even when I try and do, like HIIT stuff or interval stuff, it's just, it's, I feel like my, like, chest is going to burst. It's awful. And it's got to all be COVID because it wasn't like that before.
Sure it's not your new vegan crack habit?
It's not my new vegan crack habit. It works okay because since speaking to Tim about like orthotics and podiatry, so I've been trying to run much more mindfully about making sure that I'm running in a way that actually fits in with like the mechanics of my body. And then every time the form dips, then to start walking again and then reset and do it. So actually it works quite well doing that for sort of like half an hour a day, just to try and get your feet working in the right way again and everything. Yeah. But I thought it'd be all sorted out by now and it would be fixed, but yeah, I can't, my chest is unbelievable. And I think lots of people have experienced that.
Yeah, I've had a couple of people who are long COVIDing it up. And I know, like, Julius had long COVID, but he had it a long time ago. I think he had like 18 months ago he had COVID. But still, every now and again, he's like, whoa, like, I just feel like I can't properly breathe properly. But I think that's quite interesting, that mindful thing, because I think that probably could work with people that panic on races as well, just to have a little bit of a how's my form, let's just slow down, have a walk thing. But that is really, really shit, and there's nothing that anyone can do about it. I guess the NHS aren't fucking interested. You're not dead, are you? Bye then.
No, you're not dead, well done. Well, yeah. You're one of the lucky ones. Yeah, so I mean, I'm running, but it just, any thought of races, like, because you know, David was talking about Ibiza Marathon, and I was thinking of going to Beer Lovers, but I don't think I'd even make it round the course at Beer Lovers, because I just, you've got to be, you, it is still quite a punchy kind of pace you have to be at in order to go round, even though it's what, six and a half hours.
Has anyone given you any like information about how to like retrain after? Does anyone know? Like,
that's how a really good question, actually. How do you retrain after?
Because there's a double-edged sword thing going on here. The first one is, oh, I can't do it. You say, I don't think I could get round Beer Lovers. The minute someone says to me as a coach, I don't think I can do it, I'm like, yes, you can. Right, we need to slow down. We need to get your training up. We need to do this. We need to do some like positive affirmations. We need to like zoom in on what it is you want to do. So I'm like, of course you can, Jodie. Like, you've run MDS. You were the first person to ever run MDS. Of course you can do it. If physically your lungs aren't allowing you to, what can you do to make your lungs better?
Yeah, it's weird, because when you come out of like, if you haven't trained for a while and you go through that process of, you know, it takes about, I think, about 6 weeks to kind of get back in your groove again, and it feels terrible, your lungs feel terrible, your legs feel terrible, but essentially it comes back and then, yeah, everything kind of opens up in your lungs and it all feels fine again, and all the you know, if breathing was an issue before, then, you know, if you felt out of breath, you stop being out of breath after like 6 weeks. That I feel as out of breath now as I did when I sort of like came back from COVID in December, which is slightly frightening, because I thought it would all cleared up now, not we're in March, but it hasn't. And it's really funny, like really, really basic stuff. So I do this like little interval routine in the gym where I go through the weights and then I do like 3 minutes on the treadmill, and the last 15 seconds are kind of a much higher pace. And that was like the easiest thing to do, like the easiest thing to do. And I can't do that final 3 minutes. It's just, it feels like I've gone so far back in actually what my...
What do you think would happen if you did do that last 3 minutes? But do you think you'd fall over?
I physically can't do it. It gets to a point where I can't breathe in enough air, and I think I'd pass out or something like that. And no one wants to pass out on a treadmill.
I want you to
unless someone is filming.
Yeah, that's what I want you to do. It's fucking horrible. I just wish that, like, why haven't we got someone on who listens to this who is some sort of...
Because I don't think anyone, it can be a COVID expert, because it's still too new. There's no, I don't think this, because there's not going to be enough research around it, is there?
I do wonder, I'm not saying you're faking this to get out running, but I do wonder how much is mental fear of like passing out, falling over on a treadmill, and how much is physical. Like, I totally believe it's physical, but the thing is, if you think about how quickly we switched to wearing masks, like even now, when I go into a shop, I reach for the mask. So how quickly your brain just was like click, and when you're that ill, like you were, I think it's the opposite how slowly it is for your brain to be like, oh, it's okay to do a little bit more exercise, it's okay for this to happen, or what's that? Is that a brain aneurysm happening? Like, it's I just, but then there's no one to talk to. You're right, because we don't know anything about COVID because it's too new.
Exactly. So, but you're absolutely right. It's like, how do I, because when you start out training and you feel, because you know, if you've done the sort of the training cycle lots of times, you know that how you feel, and you know that you can push yourself and like, oh, I'm going to feel like my chest is burning, I feel like legs are burning, I feel like I'm going to die. And normally you go, that'll all pass. Like you're, mm-hmm. that is how it's supposed to feel. That's how it's supposed to feel. And this feels different to that. And so that's
imagine
why
we didn't know, right? But imagine if this had been given to us. So it's like Marvel. So you have to push through on that treadmill. And as you push through, suddenly your lungs like expand to like the size of a bat, and you become like this super endurance athlete.
So it's like, so actually, I need to battle COVID harder. I need to battle my lungs harder. And then the strength that they'll gain through me battling it is gonna give me a sort of a new level of respiratory fitness.
I mean,
it's a bit risky.
There's only one man who can talk to you about this, Goggins. He'll be able to talk you through.
I'm not sure Goggins can give medical advice.
Goggins is coming to the UK. Goggins is coming to the UK.
Oh, is he really?
There is this sport thing. I keep getting advertised on Facebook and I do not know why. I think it's called, like, David Goggins. I think it's called Arnold Sports or something. And it's
he's going to, like, the Arnold Classic thing, isn't he?
Yeah, Arnold Sports Festival, right? Yeah. It's like a proper toxic masculinity fest, as far as I can tell from their marketing. And he is going to do a talk there on Friday, the 23rd of September. I think this calls for a cult meeting.
I like the idea. The thing is, I
want to talk to him so badly.
I just, there's so many questions. There's so many questions about Goggins. Because, I mean, I wonder how many people have died as a result of his advice.
Fucking pussies, motherfuckers. They deserve to die.
They deserve to die. You're weak. You're weak. Yeah. Live again. Live again.
That's natural selection, motherfuckers. So, like, but I would like to talk to him. I'd like to lock him in a room, not in a sexy way, but like lock him in a room where he couldn't get out and I reckon I can probably make him cry within 5 minutes.
Because I like the idea. If
there's
you can make
so
Goggins
much
cry.
Like pent up, like, you know, vulnerability. He's the opposite of vulnerability.
Well, no, but the thing is that sat behind it, everyone's the same. Sat behind it, there will be something that can make him cry.
Oh, no, sat behind it is like, so much blame. He blames everything on the past, like blames everything on his experience. And it's like, that's not healthy.
There's going to be something that unlocks it, isn't there? There's going to be something you can say to him that will just make him burst into tears.
Yeah,
and then
I'm just fascinated by him. But the worst thing I'm fascinated more about is the cult behind him. And I'm sure it's like our cult is very different to his cult. But I just would love to talk to him. And he's here. He's here on the 23rd of September. I might do some more digging on that. I don't want to go to the masculinity fest, but
Fest. There's a new one. A new one to Mike. We've got an idea.
The natural masculinity toxic masculinity fest. Show.
Manfest.
Manfest.
It's just manly stuff for men.
Can you imagine?
The thing is,
and all the
chairs are
really far apart, so men can sit with their legs really far apart.
As I'm saying it, I think it would be a goer. I think there is a big enough market of people who need to fight back, who want to fight back against the encroaching, nature of vulnerability and everything else. Manfest.
Are you sick of being asked by your wife what's wrong? Yeah. Manfest.
Manfest.
What would be at Manfest then? Goggins.
Oh, I don't know. Some axe throwing. Just some generally manly sports.
Yeah, rage room where you could just go in and shout.
A lot of ultras could go there. A lot of ultras that have the word extreme in them. If you've got the word extreme in it, you're allowed to do
there's
that.
There's a couple of extreme ones that it would be amazing.
There'd be like a craft beer section as well, because
it wouldn't be a craft beer section. The whole thing would be sponsored by Carlsberg or Stella. Oh,
yeah, I don't know. You'd have different bars for different ages of masculinity, wouldn't you? Like, so you have one bar that's set up like all bar one. So one type of, it's an all bar one. That's one type of masculinity. And then you'd have a more sort of traditional pub, which would have Fosters in it.
And then you'd have a nightclub, a really horrible nightclub.
that only had men in it. So like something, but that would be very, very similar to those kind of places called, I'm trying to think of like the worst name.
There was one in Clapham Common and I can't remember what it was called.
They have like
or something.
Really, really dreadful names that just from the name you can just tell.
There's one in Bournemouth. There's one in Bournemouth called Extreme.
Called Casablanca's or something that. Yeah.
Brazil's.
Yeah. It'll have like ladies' night or something where women getting free. And of course, there's no women there at all.
No. Well, so there is. Just, but
there's three poor women who have just accidentally rocked up because it's a work night out and they've made the mistake of coming in on the wrong night.
There'll be like a boardroom table where blokes just go in and whack their cocks on it and get them measured and then walk out again. Amazing.
You just go in a room where there's got some women talking so they can just talk over them.
It's
a whole room with women and they just go in there and they'll go but and just that's it talk over you.
That's a classic. Finger on the lips and now then. Amazing. I love you, but I've got to go now because I really have to go do some work.
Oh, well, same here. Sorry. Oh, yeah, it's a Friday, isn't it?
It's Friday. But this has been fun. Oh, and also, should we just mention the fact we're going to be at the National Running Show again in June? Do you think that's a good idea? Or should we do that for later?
Yes. Yeah, let's talk about the National Running Show in June.
We're not going to have a stage this year, listener, because...
Is it June?
Yeah, it's June. No, it's May. May.
I was thinking,
National Running Show in May.
Yeah, I'm bad at dates.
We've not got a stage this year because we've become too big for the National Running Show and we're a distraction. So we're going to take over the little bit of the inspiration stage. So
we're going to have the other side of the... where was it again? Is it at Farnborough again?
Yeah, Farnborough Air Show. We've got the hangar next door.
Well, the thing is, they've put it at Farnborough Air Show very cleverly because that's how they bring us in on the Learjets to make sure that, you know, we go from the Learjet to the limo.
I thought that your assets had been frozen from this Russian thing, though.
No, my assets have not been frozen. I'm all right. Well, my assets are Saudi. They're Saudi, so it's okay.
That's why Hellard's not here. He's not allowed back in the country. He's in the Airbnb at the back of Putin's house. Anyway, yeah, we are going to be there. We're going to have like a little chill out area, which I don't want to call it a chill out area because I keep thinking that scene in David Brent's Life on the Road.
When we're talking about this chill out area, I like to think it's kind of like Gaddafi's tent. Like you get waved in to speak to Gaddafi and there's just pictures of himself everywhere. Yeah. And it's all a bit awkward and people don't really know what to do. And you've got to mind your language around them. And there's kind of people lounging about. And you don't really know who they are. And there's someone that's really dangerous. You're just doing dangerous stuff. Yeah.
Bruno could be at Manfest. He'd love it.
He could be at Manfest. He'd be a speaker at Manfest, wouldn't he?
Keynote. Anyway. Sorry, Bruno. Yeah, so we've got this zone. I don't know what to call it, though. I don't want to call it a chill-out zone because it makes you feel sick. So I'd like the do-badders to come up with an idea. We basically see people sitting around on beanbags eating crisps.
It sounds like brand marketing agency zone.
It sounds like Joni's office.
Yeah, we're going to have a whiteboard and we're going to be so kind of freestyling some ideas.
We might put a foosball table in the middle. But yeah, we are going to be there. It's going to be quite good fun, I think. That's what I've got to say about that.
Well, that's all we need to say.
Okay, well,
more details at some point in the future in the Facebook group, possibly.
Maybe not. It's a surprise!
Well, it's been lovely. It's been lovely having a chat. You go out and have a nice run with your clients now, and then what we'll do is when this comes out, I'll make sure that we start spreading the whole three quarters, new 75%, thing.
Great.
Around.
Can't
so
wait
to take the heat off me after how many 300 and whatever episodes.
No one even remembered you were called three quarters. You've just reminded them all. Brilliant. Okay, I love you. I'll see you later.
See you later.
Bye 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 bye. I must admit I was a clown to be messing around. But that doesn't mean that you have to leave town. Come back, yes, and give me one more try. Cause a love like this should I never ever die. Come back. Fuck you, buddy.